This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I am Chinedu Ofo, and here's what's coming up.
Estimates suggest that between 65 and 85% of COVID-19 cases are asymptomatic. The reported cases we see could therefore just be the tip of the iceberg.
That was Matshidiso Moeti, the World Health Organization's Regional Director for Africa, on a new analysis that indicates the magnitude of the COVID-19 pandemic on the continent is greatly underestimated. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. A new World Health Organization initiative is getting underway in Africa to rapidly detect COVID-19 infections to curb transmission and contain future flare-ups of this deadly disease. Lisa Schneider reports for VOA from Geneva.
The WHO reports more than 8.4 million cases of COVID-19 in Africa, including 214,000 deaths. However, a new analysis indicates the magnitude of the pandemic on the continent is greatly underestimated. The assessment finds only 1 in 7 COVID-19 infections is being detected, meaning the true number of cases in Africa could be around 59 million. It estimates a lesser number of deaths, 1 in 3, is being reported. Given the low vaccination rates on the continent, WHO Regional Director for Africa, Matshidiso Moeti, says it is vitally important to know where and how the virus is circulating in communities. Currently, only 4.4% of the 1.2 billion population is fully vaccinated.
With limited testing, we're still flying blind in far too many communities in Africa. Most tests are carried out on people with symptoms, but much of the transmission is driven by asymptomatic people. Estimates suggest that between 65 and 85% of COVID-19 cases are asymptomatic. The reported cases we see could therefore just be the tip of the iceberg.
Moeti says the WHO's community testing initiative is a radically new approach and one that should help raise detection rates significantly. She says the WHO is providing $1.8 million to kick off the implementation in the 8 countries taking part in the pilot project: Burundi, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Guinea-Bissau, Ivory Coast, Mozambique, the Republic of Congo, Senegal, and Zambia.
Local authorities in hotspot districts will use antigen detection rapid diagnostic tests, which are reliable, affordable, easy to use, and provide results in around 15 minutes so that individuals can quickly know their status. It's expected that more than 7 million people will be tested through this new initiative, increasing the testing capacity in each participating country by 40%.
Moeti warns end-of-the-year celebrations could usher in a fourth wave of the coronavirus across Africa and the globe. She urges wealthy countries that have vaccinated around two-thirds of their populations to share their surplus doses now with people in Africa rather than next year. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Yesterday, Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta met with U.S. President Joe Biden at the White House as part of his trip to the United States this week. Jonathan Muruti has been covering the visit for VOA Swahili service, and he spoke with Kate Pound Dawson about President Kenyatta's trip.
So President Kenyatta's visit was mainly to talk about the vaccine issue, because you all know that he has been very vocal in talking about what he actually calls vaccine apartheid, where he says that developing countries have been left behind, which is a fact, because only about 5% of Africans in Africa have been vaccinated, because of course they have not been able to secure enough vaccinations for their people. But besides the vaccine issue, there were other issues where he wanted to make it very clear to President Joe Biden that Kenya is very key. And Joe Biden himself, the president of the United States, didn't mention that Kenya is very key in terms of ensuring that there is regional peace and security. You will recall that Kenya plays a key role in the region where there are issues issues with Al-Shabaab in East Africa and now what is happening in Ethiopia.
Does he leave the U.S.? Does he wrap up all these meetings feeling like his message was heard and he accomplished any of his goals?
Seems that President Kenyatta was very happy to have discussed these issues, and the assurance is that he got from President Joe Biden, especially on a very key partnership, improving the partnership that the United States has with Kenya. I think the take home here is he was very happy with that, and especially when it came to President Biden announcing that he was the United States was going to be giving 17 million, I beg your pardon, 17 million doses of J&J, Johnson & Johnson vaccine to the African Union.
This trip by Mr. Kenyatta comes right after the release of the Pandora Papers, in which it was revealed that Mr. Kenyatta and his family have hidden some of their wealth overseas in secret accounts. Did this topic come up during his visit, both at the White House and with other people here in the U.S.?
Yes, it did come up first in New York when he was asked in a news conference what he had to say about that issue. You have already explained what really happened with the Pandora Papers. What he said was his name is not really there, that it is his family's name that is there. Now, not many people are buying that or are taking that, kindly, because, of course, being the president and his name, his father and his mother, being the people that carry his name, have carried that name for since independence, many people think that he should just own up and say that he's part of that family and therefore should be able to explain what is going on. At the White House, this issue was also discussed because President Joe Biden himself said that there was a need to discuss or to underscore the need for transparency in local and international financial systems. But in terms of coming out very openly and discussing this, I can only say what I have seen from the readout that they say that they did and discuss and underscored the need for transparency in local and international financial systems. So no details came out. Maybe later. We don't know. But just to end on that point is that President Kenyatta has promised that when he gets back to Kenya, he's going to address this issue comprehensively.
There is also another topic that you say Mr. Kenyatta brought up. Can you talk about that?
Yes, indeed. And this was about climate change and the role that he says that his country and Africa in general is playing in making sure that the change does not obliterate, he said, the world. And what Kenyatta actually told President Joe Biden is that that Kenya and Africa in general are the least emitters of dangerous gases, if you like, and that they also pay the highest price, meaning that they would like to see, as African leaders, they would like to see countries that are developed play a more important role.
That was my colleague Jonathan Muriti with VOA Swahili Service speaking with VOA's Kate Pound-Dawson. Civic and economic activity have declined sharply in Douala, a Western English-speaking city in Cameroon, after a government soldier opened fire, killing a 5-year-old girl on her way to school. Irate civilians attacked and killed a soldier suspected to have killed a child. Armed separatist fighters asking the military to leave Buea are in running battles with government troops. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
About 30 armed men in a video shoot in the air, claiming to be separatist fighters in Buea, an English-speaking town in Cameroon's southwest region. In the video circulating on social media platforms such as Facebook and WhatsApp, the armed men dressed in dark uniforms say they want Cameroon military to leave Boya for being unable to protect the lives of civilians. A spokesperson for the armed group, who does not identify himself, says their anger is provoked by the abuses committed on civilians by Cameroon's military.
Kumba Moyoka Boya Road.
He says separatist fighters are blocking roads leading to Boya as a sign of anger after Thursday's killing of a five-year-old girl child by Cameroonian troops deployed to fight separatists. He says all English-speaking Cameroonians should join separatists and fight for their freedom from the majority French-speaking nation. Cameroon's military says the video was shared on Thursday night by separatists wanting to impose a lockdown in Boya after a gendarme officer shot and killed Carole Louise Ndiali, a five-year-old girl on her way to school. The military said the gendarme opened fire on a vehicle when the driver refused to stop at a gendarmerie checkpoint. In a statement, the military said the gendarme officer targeted the car tires but mistakenly shot at the seat on which Ndiale sat. Angry youths beat and killed the gendarme official, the suspected of killing Ndiale, the defense ministry said. At least 2,000 civilians protested the killing on the streets of Boya. Some civilians marched each brandishing 500 CFA francs, that is less than $1. They said the gendarme was angry that the driver did not give a 500 CFA franc bribe and opened fire on the car. The military denies allegations that the gendarme asked for a bribe from the driver whose car had no documents. Schools and markets remained closed on Thursday and Friday. Bernard Okalia Bilai is governor of Cameroon's southwest region where Boya is located.
Il faudrait pas que la population, les parents se laissent aller à cette colère.
Bilai says by protesting on the streets, civilians are making it possible for separatist fighters to infiltrate and create disorder in Boya. He says civilians should not keep their businesses and schools closed as ordered by the fighters. Bilai says any government soldier caught abusing the rights of citizens will be punished. Bilai said because a gendarme misbehaved, civilians should not lose confidence in their military. Cameroon separatist fighters, angry about perceived marginalization by Cameroon's French-speaking majority, have been battling government troops in two English-speaking regions for nearly 5 years to form a breakaway state called Ambazonia. Esther Njomo Omam, director of the non-governmental organization Reach Out Cameroon, says women and children are the hardest hit in the conflict.
People have been traumatized, and we are calling on all, especially our security forces, to exercise restraint in places such as the townships. Shooting at the vehicle was not right. Killing the child was not appropriate. We do not accept it. But taking the laws also into our hands to kill him who shot the child is not appropriate.
The United Nations reports that over 3,000 people have been killed and 750,000 displaced. Human Rights Watch accuses both government troops and separatists of committing atrocities. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
56 former liberation fighters have been arrested in South Africa after holding two ministers and a deputy minister hostage. The veterans, who are demanding payouts and other benefits for their participation in the liberation war, had demanded to meet with President Cyril Ramaphosa, but ministers were sent instead. A breakdown in the meeting led to the ministers being taken hostage. Tuso Komalo reports from Johannesburg.
For 3 hours, the Minister of Defense and military veterans Thandi Modise, head deputy Thabang Makwetla,
and minister in the presidency, Monli Kungubele, were held against their will by a group of former liberation fighters. The three had attended a meeting called to resolve the veterans' grievances that include compensation of up to $286,000 each. When the meeting reached a stalemate, the three decided to leave. Gungubele issued a statement on what happened.
We found ourselves in a situation which I consider untenable, legally unacceptable. As we were leaving the meeting, proceeding to the doors, they closed the doors. It is at that point when we realized that we were held hostage, and we expect the law to follow its course in dealing with a behavior of this nature.
However, the veteran's spokesperson, Mduduzi Chiyi, told local media that he disputes the allegations.
We met with that team yesterday, and we asked for the president or the deputy president. They told us that they were not coming to the meeting, and we said we are going to wait for them up until they come. I'm not sure whether we call it a hostage, where we say, can we wait as a team, because we were told that the president is coming.
But police spokesperson Vishi Naidu confirmed to journalists that it was indeed a hostage situation.
We successfully penetrated the room where they were being held hostage, and there were no shots fired. There were initially no injuries reported, but while processing the 56 suspects, we received reports to which we had to promptly respond and take them for medical.
The veterans also want housing allowances, medical aid for their families, and university grants for their children. Groups of former war veterans have been linked to several incidents of unrest, including attacks on foreign-owned shops and foreign truck drivers in KwaZulu-Natal province. Prior to the arrest of former President Jacob Zuma on charges of contempt of court, a group of former military veterans camped for over a month at his home, vowing not to allow anyone to arrest him. The Liberation War veterans, who constituted a recognized structure within the ruling African National Congress, were recently disbanded by the party, straining relations and likely affecting the party's performance in upcoming elections. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
The Uganda People's Defense Forces have transferred two suspected rebels to South Sudan authorities. The suspects were arrested from different parts of Uganda and have been in detention since last November. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
One of the suspected rebels, Corporal Victor Batal, was arrested in Uganda's Koboko district. He told the Ugandan army, the UPDF, that he was a member of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition, SPLM-IO, before joining the National Salvation Front, or Army, NSF, between 2018 and 2019. The other suspected rebel, Augustine Yakal, was arrested in Uganda's Busia district. Yakal has said he was captured and forced into military training in South Sudan's Yei County in 2018, but escaped and joined his parents, who had relocated to Uganda. The NSF rebel group is one of the groups accused of fighting the South Sudan government and destabilizing Africa's youngest nation. UPDF 4th Division Commander Brigadier General Bone Bamwisike handed the suspects to South Sudan officials at a meeting in Uganda's Gulu district. Bamwisike said the handover is aimed at bolstering relations with South Sudan, as well as helping to restore peace in the region.
We coordinate cordially, and we know we have love for our brothers, and we know really we support them, and they also support us, because we are brothers and sisters, and we shall continue maintaining that. When our people are there, let them also be handled humanly, so that whenever there is something, let them be helped there, like the way we do it here. For the betterment of our people, for the betterment of every one of us. So my two brothers, today I officially hand over them. Feel free. We know there you are going to be defended.
Captain Jamel Majok is the liaison officer of South Sudan's People's Defense Forces. He said South Sudan will continue to coordinate with Uganda on security issues to keep rebel activity from filtering across the border.
Actually, we operate and we coordinate for a long time. And whatever is going to take place here, it is very official. I want to declare that I have already sent these people peacefully. They are safe. There is no problem as we are coordinating. And already I heard them and I heard from them. They are okay. No tension. They are very safe. So our coordination will continue.
One of the suspects, Batal, has said he is worried of their safety back in South Sudan.
The brothers came here. They said they wanted to take us back to South Sudan. We refused. Actually, we cannot go. If they want it, let the UN come and take our problems. Now they say no, there's nothing will done. Last week, yeah, they came here. Then they ask us, this brother said no, they will bring Red Cross. And then they will hand over us to Red Cross. We say if like that is okay. Now, like they decide, this is our country, cannot care.
However, the South Sudan government has pledged to grant amnesty to the suspected rebels. The NSF rebel group, led by Thomas Siriro Swaka, has been blamed for attacks on cargo trucks and travelers along the Juba-Nimule Highway. The group also is accused of recruiting youths and men from districts in Uganda's northern and West Nile regions into armed struggles against the South Sudan government. After suspected NSF fighters attacked an aid convoy in September, the South Sudan Army urged regional bodies to designate it as a negative force that disturbs peace in the world's youngest nation. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
The Pan-African Film Festival of Ouagadougou returns to Burkina Faso this weekend after being cancelled last year due to the COVID-19 pandemic. One Burkinabe director who has made a film documenting a nursery for the infants of sex workers talks about the importance of telling African stories through cinema. Henry Wilkins reports from Ouagadougou, Burkina Faso.
Mamune Sano is a documentary film director from Bobo Dioulasso, Burkina Faso's second city. In 2019, he made a film which is being screened at the Pan-African Film and Television Festival of Ouagadougou, or FESPACO. Night Nursery follows the story of an older woman who runs a nighttime home for sex workers' children in Bobo Dioulasso. Sanu says he wants Night Nursery to humanize sex workers. He says the idea was to show a different side to sex workers, which is very rarely seen. In Burkina Faso and in the rest of Africa, this profession is frowned upon, he says. But it's also the oldest profession in the world. When we see these girls, people say they're bad people because they're sex workers, he adds. FESPACO has been running since 1969, and this year will feature films from around 30 African countries in its official selection. Cinema professionals and cinephiles travel from all over Africa and beyond to attend. FESPACO is one of the biggest African film festivals, and for me to be selected and represent Burkina Faso in the documentary film section will mean this film will be seen by the whole world, not just by Africans, Sano says. Alex Musa Sawadogo, the director of FESPACO, says that this year the event will also host the African International Film and TV Market, known as MICA, for the first time. Soma says, because this year the MICA will be held at FESPACO, they've invited distributors, whose name he prefers not to mention, to Ouagadougou. He says the market will allow them to find new projects that are in post-production and also films that are already finished but not scheduled for FESPACO, so that they can buy them for their own platforms. Last year, FESPACO, which usually happens every 2 years, was cancelled due to COVID-19. Burkina Faso is also in the middle of a conflict with terrorist groups linked to Islamic State and Al-Qaeda. Burkina Faso's culture minister, Elise Foniyama Ilbudo Thiambiano, says it's important the festival goes on. She says it's a challenge for Burkinabe to continue to be able to keep the festival going every 2 years. But it's through cinema we can see the vision of Africans and the people who live on this continent, she adds. She points out that her predecessors all made sure FESPACO remained a focal point for Africa, and she intends to do the same. As for Sanu, he's hoping Night Nursery could receive an award and the recognition it needs to win a wide audience. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Ouagadougou, Burkina Faso.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I am Junior Wilford, Washington. For all latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. And thank you again for tuning in and choosing The Voice of America.